Thank you for tuning in to A Voice of a People here live on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can also download an app called TuneIn on any electronic device. Once you download it, please search WWGH. Or you can call in during a live interview broadcast by calling 740-383-9944. For any questions, you want to be a part of the conversation or to make any comments. Guess what? There's only 53 days remaining in the year 2021 and 17 days before Thanksgiving. Boy, this year is almost over, and what a year we have had. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-382-8552. We also have Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Number there, 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Ongoing announcement, free produce every third Saturday of every month. And I think this year, the last month will be December, that this will take place until next April. But this takes place November the 20th. It begins at 12 noon until 2 p.m. And with the holiday coming, if you know of someone who may be in need of free produce, please tell them about this advertisement. Inspect Ohio LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 29 years of experience working for you. Owner Cheryl Lee, location LaRue, Ohio. Phone there, 740-262-0939. I like to start my show off with a thought for today, and it begins, good thoughts for a healthy mind. I gave you the wrong title. Banish ego, okay? Ego is not just having a bad head. Ego is present every time you feel any kind of fear or hear yourself saying, that's mine. The truth tells us that nothing is mine or yours. We are all trustees, and fear is only present where there is the voice of attachment. Detach from everything, and you will banish ego. Fear will be no more, and only then can true love return. I'll read that again. Detach from everything, and you will banish ego. Fear will be no more, and only then can true love return. Hopefully you enjoyed the thought for today. Now I will turn my attention to my guest today, Tim Combs. He is our political analyst and historian, a former history teacher at Marion City Schools, also a candidate himself in the past. He is here to share with us things from after the election, our local elections last Thursday night. Yeah. How you doing, Tim?
Great. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Good to see you. Absolutely.
Well, let me first of all ask, and we were talking here prior to the going on the air.
Right.
Was there some sort of a problem with the Board of Elections with results? Because I tried to get on early in the evening, and I think I was just getting maybe the absentee results, and I didn't get anything until the next morning before they were all in. So was there I meant to call the board. I didn't do it. I'm just wondering, was there a problem of some kind or...
I think it was a decision made, and I guess whoever was in charge made that decision that the results will be handed out when they had everything.
Okay, they were going to do one report at the
end. One report at the end.
And that would have been the board would have made that decision.
Right.
And do you know when they did finally brought all the results? When they finally did
it was after 11.
Pardon?
It was after 11 that evening.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think I left there about 11:15, so I waited, and he gave them to me first, since I was there first.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was there.
Okay. Well, by that time I had turned off the computer. I didn't. So okay.
And Scott was off the chain, boy. He was calling down there. What's going on down there? Because he was live on the air,
yeah.
Right? Trying to get the results.
Okay.
Wow, and I could only give him the absentee ballots in the early voting.
Okay, well, then I thought that's what it was. Sometimes make that decision. I mean, when I was on the board, we would sometimes make that decision. But
right.
Okay. All right.
A little over 8,000 people voted during this election.
Yeah, something like 8,400, something like that. So, yeah.
Which is not really good, is it?
Yeah, it was about 22 or 23%, which, you know, a local election, there was, in some cases, not a lot of contests and so on. But, well, I guess this is kind of our post-election show and so forth. I'm going to actually begin at the national level, down to the state, regional level, and then down to the local level.
Okay.
Nationally, there are five states that elect their state officials in the odd-numbered year.
Okay.
45 of the states do it the even-numbered year, but five states do it the odd-numbered year, namely New Jersey, Virginia, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Now, let me just say Louisiana kind of marches to a different drummer. They sort of do theirs in a different thing. Usually, they hold their elections on a Saturday in mid-November. The other four states usually do the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. This year it was Virginia and New Jersey.
Okay.
Republicans had a good day in Virginia. Virginia is a unique state. It is the only state where the governor cannot run for re-election. They serve one four-year term.
Yeah, you were talking about that,
weren't
you?
And then basically, the moment a Virginia governor takes office, they're lame duck because they can't run again.
Hmm.
Now, this used to be the system years ago in the South.
Right.
Back in the days when it was an overwhelmingly Democratic South. Governors only served one term. Since then, all the other states have allowed their governors to run for consecutive terms.
Right.
But Virginia still does not. Every 4 years, a new governor's elected. Now, their lieutenant governor and their attorney general can run for re-election, but not the governor. So in Virginia, a Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, won the governorship over Terry McAuliffe, a former governor.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Republican picked up the lieutenant governor's office and the attorney general's office. Now, in the case of the attorney general, it was an incumbent Democrat who was defeated. Virginia elections for those offices usually tend to go up one way or the other. The one party wins usually all three. Also, in their election for their legislature, Republicans did take a majority in what they call their state house of delegates. That's comparable to our state house of representatives. A 51 to 49 majorities. They went from a 55-45 Democratic majority to a 51-49 Republican majority.
Right.
Their state senators are not up for election this year, and still the state Senate still has a Democratic majority of 21 to 19. So the Republican governor is going to probably have little issues there in terms of getting things through since he's doesn't have the state Senate. Now, New Jersey, Democrats had a better time. There were some Republican gains, but Democrats still had a better election. Their governor, Phil Murphy, was reelected.
Okay.
And actually did something that had not been done in 44 years. An incumbent Democratic governor actually went reelected to a second consecutive term. Last time that happened was back in 1977.
Mm.
So, but they did keep their legislature, and so that view. There was a lot of sometimes kind of overemphasis on what this all means. We'll see, you know, some things, the Harbinger of next year, we'll see. So that was the national results. And then, around the country, there were other elections for mayor. And Eric Adams, a Democrat, was like the mayor of New York City.
Okay.
Second African-American mayor in the city's history. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, David Dinkins served a term as mayor.
That's right, because Cuomo, he stepped down. No, that was
Cuomo,
Blasio?
He was the governor. No, Andrew Cuomo, he stepped down as governor of New York.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of, and then they say Michelle Wu was the mayor of Boston, a Democrat. These were usually Democratic cities. Coming down to the state of Ohio, generally around the state, the cities that had mayor's elections, Cincinnati, Toledo, Dayton, Cleveland.
Okay.
Democrats held all the mayor's offices. Now, a lot of these cities, or in fact, all those cities are charter cities, and technically the mayor's run on without partisan labels, but the people running were all Democrats, and they retained all the mayor's offices. And then regionally, and I'm always looking at what happens in Franklin County in Columbus. And again, Columbus, when I first came to Marion 50-some years ago,
okay,
Columbus was, and Franklin County was kind of a two-party county and city. The Republicans definitely had the edge. Mm-hmm. Those days are long gone.
Oh, really?
Democrats, this is what they call demographics have changed. The mm-hmm. population has changed in the Columbus, Franklin County area. Now it has become a very heavily Democratic city and county. In fact, to the point, Republicans really don't even contest in the city of Columbus anymore.
Oh.
Now, technically, the elections are nonpartisan, but the parties do endorse candidates. And I first said they had three city council seats up, and the three endorsed Democrats were elected over a gentleman who was actually an independent, but it was endorsed by the Franklin County Republican Party. Now, technically, usually these people are elected 4-year terms, mm-hmm. but because of a change in the Columbus Charter, the current members of council are elected only for a 2-year term. In 2 years, the Columbus council system is going to change.
Okay.
They're going to go from a 7-member city council to a 9-member council, and the 9 council members will be elected from districts. As I understand it, the people have to live in a particular district, but they will actually be elected citywide in the city of Columbus. But they will represent in different parts of the city. And the hope is that by doing it that way, they can try to get different people from different parts of the city of Columbus, which is obviously a large urban city.
Oh, yeah. Over a million people there.
I don't know how this is going to be, whether some council members may have to move to get into a proper district or what's going to happen with that. Hmm. And then... And that also is in there that the mayor will be up for election in Columbus.
Is that for 2022?
That's in 2023. 2 years from now.
Okay,
yeah.
2 years from now.
The other thing that's happened is, as I say, the Franklin County has changed dramatically politically. About, I know, maybe it was 20, 30 years ago, there was an article, and I believe it was actually the New York Times, that the Franklin County Republican Party at that time had one of the largest, best organizations in the country.
Wow, okay.
Those days are long gone. And to give you an example, just one example. Obviously, Franklin County has a lot of judgeships. I mean, they've got, I don't know how many, Common Pleas Court and municipal. The Franklin County Municipal Court actually has 15 judges now.
Really?
And the Common Pleas Court is probably 30 or 40 Common Pleas judges, whatever. It's obviously, a big urban county. And then also, they form their own Court of Appeals because they're a big enough county, they have got enough business discord for Franklin County.
Right.
For years, Republicans have dominated these offices, but that again has changed. An example, a year ago, there were 10 judgeships elected in Franklin County for the Common Pleas Court of Appeals.
Okay.
Democrats swept all 10 of them. In the process, 4 incumbent Republican judges got upended from office.
Okay.
This year, there were 7 judgeships in the Franklin County Municipal Court. Democrats ended up winning 5 of the 7 contested ones. There were 2 uncontested, also Democrats were running opposed. So that means the last 2 years, a total of 17 judgeships, Democrats have won 15 out of the 17.
Not bad, huh?
Well, no, and then this is just in the last couple of years. There have been other changes as years have gone on. To the point, and particularly in Franklin County, the political parties put out what they call slant cards.
Okay.
Where they list their candidates and then have them hand-delivered or mailed or whatever to people of their party. To the point now, and this is something I was aware of, one, I wasn't aware that it happened, but at least in the last couple of years, 3 of their judges have switched parties from Republican to Democrat because they were concerned that they see the trend on the wall that they could end up being ousted. Now, they maintain that they did it because of the change in the National Republican Party, which mm-hmm, may well mm-hmm. be part of it.
Right.
But also, I think they see the hand right on the wall that, you know, if we don't do this, we may end up out of a job. And the mm-hmm. 2 Republicans that did win this year just barely got reelected and so on. And then the other thing was, you know, you had school boards elections and so forth. That was a big thing around the country. Coming down here locally, again, Republicans made gains in Marion.
Yeah, they did.
2 of the Democratic office holders, City Treasurer Tom Panett and 64 Councilman Kathy Smonger, were defeated for re-election. Tom Panett losing to one Tommy Reese mm-hmm. for the office of City Treasurer. And Kathy Smonger, who had been the 6th Ward Council member, was defeated by another council member, Mike Neff, who was an at-large member who lived in the 6th Ward.
Okay.
Won that seat. So the council's going to have a 63 Republican majority on it in come January. And, of course, Bear Schwartz is still in office. Mark Rose, the Democratic law director, is still in office. And there will be three Democrats on the council. Kai Mee, the 1st Ward.
Right.
Ayers Ratliff, the 2nd Ward. And Mike Thomas at large.
Right.
And then the two new Republican council members at large are Brent Cornelius and Aaron Rollins.
Okay.
And so they...
That's why that was a vote for three people, right?
Three for three. Yeah, there were
right.
four candidates on the ballot, but then there had another one, Dick Hart, who was a former council member who I served with the city council a number of years ago. Ran in as a write-in, and difficult for a write-in to win. He only got like 230 write-in votes, so he was not elected.
Right.
And Mr. Meade had a write-in opponent, and again... I think he got like 60 write-in votes again, not anything close to being elected. So in about 2 weeks, the board will be able to certify the results. So it will be interesting to see what happens with these changes. And then also on the Marion Township board, Lynn Thomas was defeated for re-election by Ben Kressler. There are two trustees elected in each township. And Karen McCreary was re-elected, and then this Ben Kressler. What I see happening, and actually this is in America, this is across the country.
Okay.
We are getting to the point now, it's almost party line voting, regardless. And if you have the right color shirt, red Republican, blue Democratic, people are going to vote for you. I'll give you an example. The 4th Ward race, Joshua Feliciano defeated
Dana.
Dana
Booker. Yeah. Yes.
I looked at the number of votes that were cast that race altogether, and I believe it was like maybe 400, 450 altogether.
Right.
I'm going to date myself here. 30 years ago when I got reelected to a... 40 years ago,
whoa,
when I was reelected to a second term on city council.
Okay.
I defeated one Alan Endicott, the Republican challenger. And there, between the two of us, there was like 1,100 or 1,200 votes cast.
Okay.
We're talking a third of the vote that was cast 40 years ago.
Wow.
A lot of people not just voting.
They're just not, are they?
And even 30 years ago, when I got reelected to another city council large, we had... You know, a number of votes far more than was cast in this large election. And that, I think, is an issue there.
It is a big issue.
So that's a problem. It is becoming increasingly difficult in many of these communities for people in the, whether it be Republican or Democrat, in larger cities for Republicans and for smaller communities, a lot of Democrats, to win election. Because of the almost party line voting happening, Democrats locally have suffered several losses in the last few years.
Yes,
and we'll see what happens next year. I mean, next year there's a commissioner seat up in the county auditor seat. Joanne Consotis, I believe, is going to run for re-election as auditor. She's well respected in the office, but it sometimes it makes any difference on that process.
True.
So we'll just say we'll have to wait and see how this all pans out.
How do we address the issue of so few people voting?
Well, that you've probably asked a $64,000 question. getting people out to vote.
Right.
Now, some people said because of the fewer voting locations, but the problem is because of fewer voting locations is getting enough poll workers to vote what we do have.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem. When I was on the board, it's become more of a problem as the years are going on.
Wow.
And... in fact, actually, I think the laws may have changed. They used to be you had to have two Republicans, two Democrats in the polls. Now I think they're down to whether a Republican and Democrat, or in some cases, maybe a Republican independent or a Democrat independent or whatever.
Right.
And they've also allowing now younger people to become poll workers.
Okay.
We did a little bit of that when I was on the board, but at that time, you had to be a registered voter, at least 18. And to be able to vote at the polls. Now, apparently, as long as you are 17 and be able to eligible to vote or whatever, you could be a poll worker. They've doing this to try to get, you know, people in working. There was a survey, I think it was a year or so ago, I saw a report. Now, this was a national report.
Okay.
That the average age of poll workers nationally was like the mid-70s. That's not sustainable over a period of time.
No.
Because people are going to retire.
True.
And getting young people to be poll workers can be a challenge. And so that's the reason that in some cases they've had to reduce the number of polling locations because they just can't get the people to be able to work.
Wow.
I mean, let's face it, it's a long day. I mean, you're talking from election morning to 6:30 with the polls open to 7:30. No, that's 13 hours there, and plus then you have before and after. So altogether, you're maybe putting in a 14, 15-hour day, whatever. And getting a lot of people to do that anymore is difficult. So, So there's, you know, the terms of poll workers and elections and what's happening there. One other thing I wanted to mention, and this was actually in yesterday's Columbus Dispatch.
Okay.
It was a supplement, in fact. And this is a description of the final General Assembly District plan that was adopted by the Ohio Redistricting Commission. This is for the seats of the General Assembly of Ohio.
Okay.
State representatives and state senate districts. Right now, the legislature is working on the congressional district plan, the 15 for the U.S. Congress, U.S. House in Washington,
in D.C.,
which is the reason why we have a federal census, is to determine every 10 years, determine what the state's representation is going to be in the House for the next 10 years.
Okay.
As I say, this plan was adopted for the General Assembly. Because it did not have sufficient number of votes that needed, it can only last for 4 years. It might not make it that way because there have been several lawsuits filed, and I believe there's a hearing next month, early next month, before the state Supreme Court on this plan.
Right.
There is many sentiment who believe the state Supreme Court is going to throw this plan out because it is not, that's almost an example of gerrymandering. Now, right now in the state Supreme Court, there are 4 Republicans and 3 Democrats. But one of those 4 Republicans is Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, mm-hmm. who has been very vocal in her criticism of gerrymandering. She cannot run for election because of the 70-year-old retirement age. So she has nothing to lose if she decides to vote with the 3 Democrats to throw this plan out.
Right.
And there's a very real possibility that might happen. Now, we don't know because there'll be a hearing and so forth. So if the state Supreme Court does, in fact, throw this out, it'll send it back, I presume, to this redistricting commission to come up with a better, maybe they feel more equitable plan.
Right.
The congressional district plan is facing some of the same criticism. Likely it's going to face litigation, not in the state court, but maybe in the federal court also.
Mm-hmm.
And even Governor DeWine, who's a Republican, has made comments about the congressional plan, even about this plan. And the congressional plan probably needs some work.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. They actually have to go to the end of the month to adopt the new congressional plan. And of course, we're losing one congressional seat. We're going from 16 congressional districts down to 15 congressional districts. So they have to redraw that. And again, they have to be basically about the same population in each district and so forth, based on the one person, one vote rule. The district process can be a very political process, but one of the things that's going to happen, this new city council taking office has to come up with a district plan for the city's 6 wards mm-hmm. in time for the 2023 municipal election.
Right.
And we'll see how that goes. I mean, there is a 6-3 Republican majority that is enough to override a mayor's veto, but whether or not, and there's, I'm not going to get into any specifics here, but there is, I think, at least one Republican council member who may not be totally on board with his fellow Republican council members. I'm not going to mention names because I think it would be counterproductive.
counterproductive, right?
So, anything. So we'll see what happens.
Wow.
And, of course, as I say, in a few weeks, we'll certify these results, then we get ready for the 2022 elections coming up. But, again, if, let's say, the state Supreme Court throws out this legislative district plan, that is going to throw a real
a wrench and everything
into the program for the May primary.
Okay.
Raising the possibility, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but raising at least the possibility that the May primary might get pushed back.
Okay.
Depending on what happens and how all this works out. We'll have to wait and see all that work, that happens.
Wow.
So, as I say, it's, you know, now, of course, there are some Democrats who feel that if the Congress had approved the infrastructure measure, which they did approve Friday night.
Oh, they did. How much approved, money?
It's the, this is the one, this is the bipartisan
infrastructure. The little one,
okay. $8 billion or something.
$1.8 billion, okay.
And this is going to do a lot of things for infrastructure around the country.
Well, that's good.
The president is scheduling, I think, the next day or two, a signing ceremony probably in the East Room of the White House. And
that's good.
Now the other measure, the so-called Biden Build Back Plan, that hopefully will be approved late November, early December. That's a separate legislation on that one.
I hope so. They were saying his popularity had gotten down to like 38%.
Well, I think there's some of the little higher than that. But anyway, something that if this plan, this infrastructure bill had been adopted maybe in mid-October, maybe Democrats
instead of dragging it, right?
Might have been able to be successful in Virginia elections.
Right.
So we'll see. And but at least that part of it has been approved. One bill, one down, one to go at this point.
Right.
And actually there actually were 13 Republicans who voted for the bill, actually 6 Democrats who voted against it for whatever reasons. And so we'll see, whether some of these Republicans who voted for it might be primaried in their party primaries. So that is kind of a view where we're at. As I say, of course, next year's state elections, governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, all the state officials are being elected. State legislature, again, whether it's this plan or some other plan, we'll have to wait and see.
Right.
Members of Congress, of course, United States Senator, you're already seeing ads for, particularly in the Republican primary, J.D. Vance, of course, was the one who wrote this book, Hillbilly Elegy, a few years ago.
Okay.
He was originally from Ohio. He moved to California, he moved back. Because he made some rather uncomfortable comments about Mr. Trump back in 2016.
The California governor?
No, he had moved back from California.
Okay.
He had originally from Ohio. He lived out in California for a time. Then
okay.
About Mr. Trump, and now that's being used against him in a Republican primary, which, you know, the Republican base, whatever, so... And then I just saw something today, and I don't know where this is at, that a special grand jury is being convened by the Fulton County, Georgia prosecutor to look into Mr. Trump's activities back last winter with the Georgia Secretary of State. And so we'll see. And then, of course, another grand jury has been convened in New York looking into some of the business dealings that he had.
Right.
So... And, of course, you still have this issue with Mr. Landon, the former city auditor, and all that happened there. And a special prosecutor has been named, and he's looking into possible misfeasance, malfeasance. There is some concern that maybe some of his fellow Republicans might try to sweep some of this under the rug to try to keep some of things from happening. We'll see. And, of course, he did do this thing with the IRS where he was kind of giving them the back of his hand, and they... threatened to seize property and so forth. He could find himself facing some federal
trouble.
Yeah, and so we'll see how what happens there, that possibility.
Wow.
Well,
they believe in covering each other's back, that's for sure.
Well, they're sometimes get the impression that less concerned about the judicial part of it and more like what's the political part of it.
Right.
Let me just make a comment quickly. And again, this plan that was adopted, and I just was looking up where what happened as far as Marion goes. The current plan, if this one were to survive, we'd be in House District 87, which would be all of Crawford County, Marion County, and basically I believe it would be like the eastern portion of Wyandotte County. And then we would also be part of a State Senate 26, which is where our current Senate district is. And this would include three houses that's going to make up a State Senate district. And sometimes this requires people to move if they're out of the line in the same district. As I say, this is why, if let's say the State Supreme Court were throughout this legislative district plan, the filing deadline for the May primary is in February. Now, there's two things that could happen.
Right.
They could push the filing deadline back from February to maybe March, which, you know, if that would work out, still have the primary in May, but there'd be the filing deadline would be a little later. They could push back the filing deadline and the primary, maybe have the primary in June, which is what it was at one time in Ohio, just not many years ago. And so that could happen. Well, you know,
they did that for COVID last year, didn't they?
Well, of course, that's right. Well, what happened was the day before, because it was a presidential year, the primaries to be in March.
Right.
And because of that time, all this was breaking at that time, they basically canceled the March primary.
Right.
And threw it back to the end of April.
Okay.
And so all it was all done by mail.
Okay. Right.
Actually, my wife and I had already voted early in the early March in the primary.
Okay.
So we'd already voted, but those who didn't, it was all done by mail at that point.
By mail, yeah.
And that was the end
of
April then, and then that's when they had the, technically that became the official primary election. I don't think we have to worry about that kind of thing happening this time. I mean, that was a unique situation.
Yes, it was.
And of course, it's said about the general election. Well, because the general election is set by federal law, the general election in a members of Congress, president, is set for the first Tuesday of the first Monday of November. That's federal law. And one thing I forgot to mention, and we're talking about elections in Ohio, we did have two special congressional elections. One was in the Columbus area for the 15th district seat that former Congressman Steve Stivers, who resigned to become head of the Chamber of Commerce, and the Republicans held on to that seat. Carey defeated State Representative Allison Russo. That was she did well in the Franklin County Porsche district, but the more rural Republican part of the district, maybe Mr. Carey. And then up in the Cleveland area in the 11th district, this is the district that Marsha Fudge had represented in Congress. President Biden named her Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, so of course she had to resign her seat. There was a special election there, heavily Democratic district, and Chantel Brown was elected to Congress. And then apparently within a matter of, since they're elected, of course, they can take office right away. And so they apparently were sworn into office like on Thursday, both of them. Because at the time now, when this vote came up on the infrastructure bill, they were there to vote. So there's not one vacancy from Florida that will be filled, I think, in January, I believe. And that's like going to be another Democratic seat. Going Democratic. She had to leave her office. She was a member of what they call the Cuyahoga County Council.
Okay.
Cuyahoga County and Summit County are two charter counties in Ohio. They both have county charters. Only counties in the state that have that. And so she had to resign that seat to go into Congress. So.
Right.
So that was why I meant to mention that those two seats.
Okay.
And as I said, the thinking is, and you know, with 15 seats based on past voting and so forth, maybe there should be like about a 9-6 Republican Democrats split in the congressional delegation. One of the plans being proposed that would have a 13-2 Republican edge. I don't think that's going to fly. And as even the governor DeWine has said, that one probably needs some working because that's whatever.
Right.
Wow. So we'll see what happens there. I think that pretty well covers all of the various elections. What happened? The boards of election determine when results are going to be released.
Right, and that's what happened that night.
And apparently the county board here decided they were going to do one report at the end.
One report at the end.
And so all we had all evening was just the the absentee, early votes, which is what I saw. Then I clicked off, didn't come back until the morning. So the results.
Yeah, a lot of people were upset about that.
Yeah, well, a lot of times they don't show this information until
the last minute. Yeah,
and
last minute.
So you can't plan or whatever.
Because they had TV screens where you could see in the back, and all of a sudden we couldn't even see in the back what was going on. So the TVs went off, and one of the ladies said someone has to be there to actually monitor the TVs. That's why we couldn't see it anymore. Mm. So we were just sitting there waiting. Judge Finnegan, he was there. You know, he reports on that some type of radio. He's a part of something like that. And he was reporting, you know, when the ballots leave the precincts.
Okay.
You know, when they were actually on their way. Yeah. Yeah, it was him and another guy. And I said, oh, they called you out of retirement, huh, Judge Finnegan? Yeah, so he's...
Well,
what are they
going
to do about that,
Finnegan, of course, is still as the acting judge for Jason Warner after he resigned.
Right.
And I may have said this when we were here before. The governor has not yet appointed a judge or a judge for the Warner vacancy. And I know the Republican Senate Committee, apparently, as I understood it, sent down three names. There was one preference for one of the candidates, but that was back, I think, late July, early August. We're talking now, three and a half months ago, whatever.
Right, yeah.
And so far, the governor has not moved. Because the governor is the one who has to make the appointment.
Right.
And theoretically, he doesn't even have to go with the recommendation he's been sending. He can appoint any attorney he wants who is in Marion County.
Mm-hmm.
But until he does, Judge Finnegan will continue on as the acting judge.
Right.
Which, you know, he's been doing that for now over, 15, 16 months now.
Yeah.
And it's almost back to what he was when he was on the bench.
That's what he was saying.
So, because he had gone to other counties as a visiting judge.
Okay.
And again, these appointments come from the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court.
Right.
Makes these appointments. Mm. And he's, of course, I'm very familiar with the county.
Oh, yeah.
And so on.
Oh.
So,
like you said, he was in retirement. He had been there many years. What, like 30
years?
Oh,
boy,
maybe?
It was a number, of several terms he served. Yeah. Of course, before that, he was the municipal judge.
Right.
So he'd been on the bench probably 30 years, I don't know, 40 years, something like that, whatever. I mean, a number of years in both the municipal and then common police judge. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were on walkie-talkies. He mentioned that in some other counties, there have been, three or four judges that have passed away that the governor has to, replace.
And if obviously any resignation or death of a judge, then the governor makes the appointment then at that point.
Right. So it's not just here that he has to fill.
I don't know how many of those are available around the state. Right. But, any judicial vacancy. This is a constitutional thing that the state supreme or the state constitution gives the governor that authority.
Right.
It can't be changed by the legislature. You could change the state constitution to change that, but at this point, the governor has that authority.
So what about the Supreme Court? And I've heard people say that Biden should possibly put more people in the Supreme Court.
Well, again, that would require an act of Congress to expand the Supreme Court.
Okay.
The Supreme Court has been a 9-member court since, I think, about 1868.
Long time.
Now, of course, famously, Franklin Roosevelt back in the mid-30s tried to, it became the so-called court packing plan or expansion. It didn't go anywhere.
Right.
So the Congress have to change the number of associate justices. The Constitution actually establishes the position of Chief Justice of the United States, which is what John Roberts is.
Right.
Some people say the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. No. The Chief Justice of the United States.
Oh.
Now, he's on the Supreme Court. But the number of associate justices, that number is set by the Congress.
Right.
And since 1868, it has been 8 associate justices. Now, could the Congress change it? Yes, Congress could change it. They could open, they could increase it, they could lower it, whatever. But, there has been no real movement on it for 80-some years now on that. And I think it would probably be a stretch to see that happening. Very controversial to try that.
Probably. And I understand that because it shouldn't be one-sided anyway, some
say, well, can you determine term limits for justices. You could, but again, it would take an amendment to the Constitution to do that, which I can tell you right now is not going to happen. Last time the Constitution was amended, you have to go all the way back to 1992, 30 years ago, when it was the amendment that had been around since the ratification of the Constitution or the Bill of Rights back in 1789. A salary increase, I think, for justice after an election or something, and an amendment that had been floating out there for years, then suddenly got ratified. But otherwise, if it had not been ratified, it would have been 50 years. Whoa. Because the last one before that was the one that provided for the 18-year-old voting age. Okay. So it's a difficult process to amend the U.S. Constitution, and there's nothing in the foreseeable future that any kind of amendments
that's going to happen. Right. I understand that. I do, and it's a good thing that process isn't. It doesn't happen so often.
No, that is true. And right. The framers of the Constitution made there were four ways to do it. The one that has been used most often is the Congress by a 2/3 majority submits a resolution to the states, and then 3/4 of the states have to ratify the amendment.
Right.
Usually by state legislatures. You can't have state conventions that do that, which is a rarely used one. In fact, last time it was used was the 21st Amendment in 1933 to repeal the 18th Amendment, which was the repeal of prohibition.
Right.
And that's last time that was used. So.
Wow, you can remember all that stuff and just fluently bring it out of your mind just from memory. That's great. That's why I like to have you on, Tim, because you're the best when it comes to political history and analyzing things. And I really appreciate you coming to be on our show today.
Okay.
Thank you so much. And hopefully those of you who are listening enjoyed Tim Combs today. If you want to know anything about politics, just give him a call. I try to have him on every time there's an election, at least, two or three times a year, right? Maybe four even. Early voting and then, a primary, right?
Primary. This spring, right now it's going to be in May. I presume it's going to be in May, but we'll see. Who knows?
Right, absolutely. And we'll have him back on here. So thank you once again.
Okay, sure.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too. I'd like to give a shout out to the McGarry family on the loss of their loved one. I think he was 7 years old. We don't really know what happened, but I just want the community to lift him up in prayer. I think it was her great-grandson. There's just so much going on in the world today and happening so fast. But thank you once again for listening to A Voice of a People here live with Linda Sims on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. Stay tuned for tomorrow. I'll have singles Choosing God's Best tomorrow at 5:15 to 6 p.m. And also I'll be on at 4:15 to 5.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the talking place for legendary talk show host Phil Donahue.
And